Everybody's going through something, has some challenge, has some distraction. The world feels busy to most people. And when we have empathy, it helps us to see what they're going through and better market to them, better create products that help them and make the world a better place.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and I am so excited to share our guest with you today. He's brilliant. His name is Colin Hodge, and he is a startup founder and author who has led companies and growth teams responsible for over 100 million users. He's currently the co-owner of Down, a top 10 dating app in the U.S. with millions in annual revenue built on the growth principles and lessons shared in his new book, Outrageous Startup Growth. He achieved a successful exit for Down, then later reacquiring it, and 17 Live, the top live streaming video company in Asia. There's so much more I could tell you about Colin, but I'm going to let him do it himself. Colin Hodge, welcome to the Daily Helping. It is awesome to have you with us today.
Lovely to be here with you, Dr. Richard. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm excited to talk about the book. But before I do, I always like to know why, right? Why does somebody write a book? How does somebody get on the journey they're on? So let's go into the Colin Hodge time machine just for a minute or two. Take us back to some of these key moments in your life that put you on the path you're on today.
You know, Dr. Richard, just like you, I had a traumatic experience that really is a formative moment in my life. And this one was about my mother. She passed when I was in college, and she had a quick battle with cancer. And within 6 months, she was on her deathbed, and I was going through, you know, all of the range of emotions that a teenager goes through when their parent is dying. It was a hard moment, but when I got through it and I was able to look back on it without, you know, just bawling every time, what I realized is if I could survive that, then I could survive almost anything. And I could put myself out there and I could take the leap and be an entrepreneur, or I could move across the world and live in Asia away from my home culture, away from my home language, and pick up a new one. So it gave me that confidence to know that I can get through almost anything. So that's the first one that I would mention. And I guess the second one is when I had my first company start to take off and get attention. I learned this in a more positive way, that I could wear many hats. I could learn how to do marketing. I could learn how to do product work. I studied engineering, so I was a nerdy programmer in high school and then in college. But I picked up all these other fields, all these other tactics, and now, you know, kind of amateur psychology for startups, because I have this curiosity and this never quit learning attitude.
You know, they say in adversity, and it's, you know, you describe something very powerful in the loss of your mom. We tend to catastrophize things and then look at them after and say, I can survive X, whatever it is. And so, you know, I like that you framed yourself as like, oh, I'm just this nerdy engineer. But you've proven to yourself, I mean, moving to a different country where you don't know anybody, we don't speak the language. So out of curiosity, what led to that? Like, what made you decide to move halfway around the world?
I think the start of that journey, after my startup was taking off and we got, you know, 1 million users in about 3.5 months. That's how quickly we were growing, which at the time, you know, that was faster than Instagram even started. So we were the, you know, the hot talk of the town in Silicon Valley. And I had about 1.5, 2 years of that living in San Francisco, when I just felt sick of the bubble. I was like surrounded by all these tech bros and everybody just talking about that constantly. So I needed to get out, and I felt kind of like I was letting life pass me by. I only spoke one language, and I grew up with this feeling of like, I want to be multilingual. And I just escaped to Guatemala, started learning Spanish and running the company at the same time from cafes that barely had internet. So that was the beginning of that nomadic journey. As part of that, I started to be more open to, hey, I could live almost anywhere. And that's when I got connected to the founder of another dating app who was from Singapore and had an office in Taiwan. And eventually we met in person. We hit it off so much that he, within 2-3 months, gave me an offer for the whole company.
Amazing. And so let's talk a little bit about the premise for this book, Outrageous Startup Growth. So was it just that you had this experience, right? You took this app, this dating app, it was scaling, it was the talk of Silicon Valley, but not everybody feels compelled then to put that onto paper and go through the process of bringing that to life as a book. So why were you motivated to compile that into a book?
I started to look back at the crazy journey I had with this company. So as a little preview, you know, it almost died multiple times. It got kicked off the App Store. We got sued by a much bigger company who marched in 12 lawyers and threatened us at the time. I sold the company, and then the company was about to die, and I bought it back in a fire sale and rescued it and revived it, made it a top 10 better than it ever was before I sold it. So this crazy journey of this and all the startups and founders I worked with along the way, and I just felt, first, I had this story to tell. Like, I needed to get this out and see if it helps anybody, see if it resonates, and if it even reaches a few people that makes them think, oh, wow, like, he didn't have it all planned out. He didn't come from silver spoon background and have everything set up for him. Maybe I can do that too. Maybe that's the nudge, the confidence that other people need to hear that gets them started on their first company or makes them think a little bigger about the company, the side hustle they're already running.
I was going to say, you know, more than a few people have gotten because you're already a bestseller. So congrats on that.
Oh, thank you so much. And it's crazy that it's a bestseller now because, you know, you're competing against these books that are selling millions, like Adam Grant's Atomic Habits that came out in 2018, almost a decade ago. And that is still selling. That's still in the top 10 of business books. So you're competing against the giants. And I feel just very blessed to have that. But so back to telling my story and why I had to do it, I started to put this out in 2023. And I wrote this article, it's about a 10-minute read, and it took off on Medium. I think I just really hit a nerve with a lot of people, and I love to write with a very humorous and personable style, and it's not technical. It's very much about a story, and then you're going to absorb the lessons along the way. And Medium's editors loved it, so they featured it, and it got lots of kudos and feedback. And that's when people started saying, hey, why don't you turn it into a whole book? Of course, I never thought of myself as an author. So I never thought this was even, you know, it wasn't on my dream board or anything. And when I started to think about the book and talk about it with people, I realized that the key to all of my successes and even my failures was, did I understand the psychology of my users, the customer base, or the audience that I'm trying to reach? Or was I just kind of blindly putting something out there or blindly hoping something, if I build it, they will come? And so user psychology, understanding what influences us and how we make decisions, that was the golden thread through everything.
So this book then is going to, well, let's do that, because obviously that's how humans make decisions 101, right, is seminal for everything here. So walk us through that. So based on your experience and scaling apps and building this business a couple times, talk to us about how humans make decisions.
Absolutely. So we're all susceptible to a number of cognitive biases. And I actually detail in my book the top 65 of influential decision-making, psychological biases and triggers that we can have and that we can leverage as we're creating products or doing marketing to steer our customers, steer our audience toward better decisions that help them too. And that's an important ethical thing that I emphasize in the book. Of course, plenty of examples like social media companies that are abusing these things and really creating a bad environment for a lot of people. But for us as creators, how do we do it in an ethical way? And that's why I dive into examples of how we have done it to try to help users get more progress and get toward their goal. Try to frame the expectation of here's your, you know, the expectation and actual intention gap. How do we bridge that? Most customers want to get to point A. How do you build them a smooth path along the way? So all of our decisions are a product of our environment. And we, as the creators of a product or a service or a company, we have the opportunity to engineer their environment in a way that is more conducive to success, to happiness, to a better life for people.
And I want to kind of take some deeper dives into the book itself. And I like the way that you've broken this up. You've got these three main sections of the book. The first one being getting uncomfortable with being uncomfortable, or excuse me, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about that, and you alluded to that, you know, in your first story that, you know, because of what happened with your mom, that gave you the courage to know that you pretty much can get through anything and be uncomfortable. And now you live halfway around the world, and most people wouldn't have the courage to do that. Chapter four is interesting to me. The allure of authenticity. So talk to us about that.
So I actually had a dating startup that I created before the one that succeeded. And this one, you know, I was struggling with it. I worked a year and a half. I took it into a startup accelerator. And halfway through that startup accelerator's program, I just admitted to myself that this is not going to work. All those doubts that I was feeling inside about failure, about not being able to attract users or investors, I just knew that this was a big problem and I needed to talk about it. And so when I did, that freed me up to really see the truth and another side of how I could pivot and create something better. And what I created was an app and a brand that was so authentic, so just unabashed in what it was. It said what it was, and it just lived it, that it cut through all the noise in the market and it really captured people's imaginations. So that was the beginning seed of seeing that authenticity as a person, as a founder, and then also as a brand is super powerful. And in the book, what I talk about is, okay, you know, being authentic, I think we all know what it is as a human, but what does it mean for a brand? How is a brand authentic? And I talk about basically the TRUTH acronym, which starts with transparency and goes to relatability. So I break down this acronym and help you understand for your brand, for your company, your product, or whatever organization you're working on, how do you ensure that each of these elements comes through and creates this authentic feeling for the people that are viewing it? And it's so important because it's the reason why we're attracted more and more to things that feel real, is because of this authenticity. They're creating this transparency that in the past didn't exist with companies, but it's becoming much more important.
So we have a rule on the Daily Helping, Colin. When we start talking about acronyms, we have to fill out the rest of the letters. So we've got T for transparency, R for relatability. What's the U?
Yeah, so the U is uniqueness. And that is because if you're copying everybody else, it won't feel authentic to your users, to your audience. The next T is trustworthiness. That is being consistent with what you say. It is showing that you walk the talk and show up where you say you will. And then last is H for honesty. So it is living that, hey, what we say we do, what we advertise actually is there, and what we stand for, where we hold up to that, we follow through with it. So a big part of this truth checklist for authenticity is just going through and seeing how well does your marketing or your branding really come through with each of these elements.
So trustworthiness and honesty seem pretty close. What are the distinctions between those two as you see them?
I think honesty tends to be, the way I think about it, is a lot more around how you're talking about your brand. You know, are you fairly representing what it is, what your product does? If you say you're going to do something, you live those values. And trustworthiness is a lot more concrete on, you say specifically, our product delivers X, and then you deliver X. Your customer service promises something to a customer, or has a certain service level agreement with your customers, and you live that and you fulfill it. So honesty is much more about, are you living the values and are you saying what you actually are as a product or a brand? And trustworthiness is those concrete promises of, we said we're going to deliver this, we're delivering it.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. Got it. Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. I'd like to ask you some questions now about part two. And the way this is framed is intriguing to me because it's the mindset of outrageous growth. And I've never heard anybody put it quite in those words, right? Like, we have the mindset of an entrepreneur where you roll up your sleeves and, you know, take on all challenges and never give up, and all of the, you know, Rocky montage kind of colloquialisms that we use as entrepreneurs. But the mindset of outrageous growth, I don't think most people think about growth that way. I'm going to grow, I'm going to scale, but outrageous growth. So talk to us about that, and then we'll dive deep.
Yeah, so I chose the word outrageous because I love the double meaning it can have here. The first is outrageous. It's so impressive, it's so monumental and huge that only a word like outrageous can cover it. And then the second one is it really gets noticed. You know, you're not hiding in the shadows. You're not going modest. You are putting yourself out there and you are going big and you're not ashamed of it. So it's outrageous to actually reach for that and to go for that. And I love the mindset of just growth mindsets in general, whether you're an entrepreneur or you are just a human who is trying to get better every day. Having the audacity and the boldness to just say, I can grow in this outrageous manner, I can live out loud, and I can keep doing this day to day, is such a magical and wonderful thing for people to do. I personally, when I talk about it in this part of the book, what I really lean into is the resilience you need to survive everything life throws at you, and especially as an entrepreneur, all of the challenges that it takes to take something from zero and get it to one, get it off the ground and get it, put it out into the world that people are actually consuming it and they're using it. And you're having that bravery to see how the world reacts to whatever you created. Beyond that, of course, then there's all the other elements of empathy. So empathy is, I believe, one of the most underrated superpowers we can have as entrepreneurs. Because we have all of these supposed idols in the entrepreneurial world, the big founders who are billionaires, and a lot of them are not displaying empathy. But the best entrepreneurs and founders I know, they are hyper empathetic to their users, to their customer base, and to their employees, because that's how they attracted them in the first place. And so having this empathy, and I walk through in the book how to build that muscle, is so important and has helped me immensely over the years to be able to tap in and really understand what people are going through, who they are, and how to meet them where they are.
I don't think that's mentioned enough, not just in business, but in life itself, right? You know, we're always focused on moving the ball forward, right? And the reality is life is hard, right? And everything is hard. It's hard to be healthy. It's hard to be unhealthy. It's hard to be overweight. It's hard to eat right, right? So we have all of these challenges in life, and just being empathetic, being more human, is a skill that any of us can use. So I'm grateful to see it in a book about entrepreneurship, because I think it's wonderful. So the other chapters 6 and 7 seem a little bit more in line with what you would expect from, you know, when the world comes crashing down, right? Any of us who were around in 2008 remembers what that was like, or more recently COVID, right? And then can't stop, won't stop, I suspect, is getting punched in the face and getting back up ad nauseum. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. Can't stop, won't stop is all about how can we have that resilience? How can we make sure that when the world throws us a curveball, that we can still hit it and continue on? So I think as people are reading this book, I hope that these stories really come through about how a lot of this stuff can feel overwhelming or can feel just almost impossible in the moment. But after you use some of these tactics, after you gain perspective, you can overcome a lot of these challenges in your personal life and as a founder. It's really wild how much, you know, I talk to other founders and there's this unspoken commonality that we have of we're all going through this stuff, but a lot of it, we don't get to talk about it publicly. And I wanted to put that out there and say, no, you're part of, you know, we're all going through the same stuff. And I don't want you to stop on that journey.
I think this is such good stuff. Let's talk about part 3. You describe the 3 best psychology methods. So this is up my alley for startup growth. So talk to us about that, Colin.
Yeah, this is the meaty chapter. So the first 2 parts, they make up approximately half the book. Those are very much about the psychology for you as a founder, or as an individual. How do you just make yourself into a better entrepreneur, a better person with a growth mindset who has this outrageous mindset, right? And then part 3 is all about for your users, for your customers. How do you harness these methods? And of course, there are tons of them, but I try to narrow it down to just the most important ones I've seen help entrepreneurs get their startup off the ground or keep it growing in an organic, sustainable way. It starts with creating FOMO. And I have a confession, to be honest. I tell people, like, you know, when I see something, a big app or product that is just taking off, taking the world by storm and getting crazy viral growth, I actually feel a little bit jealous right now. You know, like when I'm in that moment, I'm like, ugh, how are they doing it? What is their success? I feel that envy. And then this envy, actually, I wanted to change that from a negative emotion to curiosity. And that curiosity helped me discover this is how everybody is creating FOMO, fear of missing out. And I break down the elements of FOMO. So FOMO is, you know, we see it every day. Obviously, we see it with if you see a line forming at a new restaurant or the wait list is too long, that is a form of FOMO. You see it in all sorts of products. You know, this deal is disappearing, so you don't want to miss out on it. And so how do we create that ourselves in an authentic way with our own companies, our own products? And I break down basically the first element is urgency. You need to create some sort of urgency that people feel they need to act on this or it's going to go away. The opportunity is going to go away. The second is social proof. If there's no social proof that is relevant to your audience, whether it's an authoritative figure or it's a mass of people who have approved it, you won't create FOMO because there's not this, what are they missing out on, right? The next is E for exclusivity. And so if everybody can get it right away, feeling that urgency and the exclusivity, then it's not going to create FOMO because people won't feel like they're going to miss out on something if everybody's in it. And then lastly, it is scarcity. So you want to limit whatever the amount of spots are, tickets, or deals that you have, because it, one, it helps create this FOMO, and two, it helps you scale in a better way. So whatever service or product you're providing, you can make sure that the quality of it for that tight group is off the charts, so that everybody continues that cycle and keeps talking about it and creating that social proof. So I explain in the book how Clubhouse, the audio app during COVID, was able to create FOMO and absolutely take off. Of course, they burn out, and that's part of the story as well. But how did they create it in the first place and have this self-reinforcing cycle, and how you can apply these in simple ways? You know, run an experiment where you create a wait list and then you have a limited number of invites for people to get on. Stuff like that for people to really apply right now to their company.
I forgot about Clubhouse.
Yeah.
So Colin, that's fantastic. Again, we got another acronym out of it. What are the two other psychology related skills that we're talking about here? The best psychology methods for startup growth.
Absolutely. So after FOMO, I talk about how you can engineer your customers' decisions for more success, because all of our decisions are affected by our environment. So this is using things like framing effects and pricing. If you have any sort of pricing in your business, I give you the tools in the book to know what pricing tests you should run and how they work. And I even give examples like, you know, the number one mistake that we make if you're ordering wine and how to avoid making that mistake in the book. So engineer their environment so that they make better decisions. And then the last one, I call them magic moments, because these are when you meet the exact mood of your users in their journey using your product with an intervention, an offer, or any sort of way of pushing them along the path to create outsized magic, outsized impact. And these are things like, you know, once they finally see the value of your product, it clicks for them. That creates magical retention, magical revenue results. And I walk through in the book even a formulaic way that you can figure that out for your own product or service when people can actually see the value and capitalize on that magic.
Colin, this has been a treat to talk to you. I love how you operationalize the psychology of scaling a business in a way that I really have never seen before. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question, and that is, what is your biggest helping? That one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our chat today?
You know, Dr. Richard, I would return to empathy. And it is such a quintessential part of being a great entrepreneur and doing something that feels good at the end of the day. And I see it in your work, and I see it in the best founders and creators that I know. So knowing that empathy is a superpower that we all need to remind ourselves sometimes, just because you build this muscle doesn't mean it's always active. And we need to remind ourselves sometimes that everybody's going through something, has some challenge, has some distraction. The world feels busy to most people. And when we have empathy, it helps us to see what they're going through and better market to them, better create products that help them and make the world a better place.
Well said, Colin. I love it. The book is Outrageous Startup Growth. You can pick that up wherever books are sold. But if people want to learn more about you, Colin, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me at colinhodge.com, and you'll find my book there. I have a free sample as well. And if you buy the book, you can also contact me. Special for all the Daily Helping listeners. If you want a good workbook that I send out, you can buy the book and mention Daily Helping, and I will make sure you get that.
That is generous. We'll put that in the show notes. Thank you for doing that. That's awesome. And thank you so much for joining us on the Daily Helping.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Richard, and have a lovely day.
Thank you. And I want to thank each and every one of you as well. If you liked it, if you're inspired by what you heard today, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag #MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people aren't those that help others.